You ready?
I'm ready, man.
Okay, we are here at the offices of Go Happy for the next rendition of the All Things Richmond podcast. I'm very excited to have our guest today, my only hero that I've actually met. I haven't met Jay-Z or Warren Buffett yet, so it's just you. It's
just, I get thrown into that circle.
Yeah, you're the
pretty sweet.
The third leg of that stool, the Jay-Z and Warren Buffett stool. But in all seriousness, I've known Sean Boyer.
So you weren't being serious.
I'm being serious now. So whatever I say next is definitely serious. known Mr. Sean Boyer here for 8 years, something like that, maybe. I went to see you speak at a 80 Forum event. That's the first time I saw you. I'd heard all about you and Snag a Job fame, and I heard Sean talk, and I was just kind of blown away with the type of person and business leader that you were. And so, I don't know how much you remember of the next kind of year of your life, but I wrote you a letter and said, "Hey, call me." I was guessing your email address, and then finally, after like three or four,
we had our first date at Hondo's.
We did, yeah. After some mini stalking, you agreed to go to lunch, and here we are here at your office. But for those of you who don't know, Mr. Boyer here started a company called Snag a Job, grew it quite a bit, and now runs a company called Go Happy. So I want to jump into all of that. So let's start, I guess, the beginning. Before you started Snag a Job, you were an attorney?
Yeah, a bad one, but okay. I was.
a self-aware bad attorney.
That's right.
Yeah, and then so what? Walk me through your mental process. I'm an attorney, and I'm going to create a company called Snag a Job. How does that happen?
Yeah, so I had thought when I was in college I wanted to start a commercial real estate development company.
Who would ever want to do that?
I don't know if I ever mentioned that to you or not.
Sounds like a miserable existence.
Right, so that's what I thought I wanted to do. And so I started going to lunch with people who had been successful at that. And almost to a person, they suggested that I go to law school, focus on commercial real estate, secure transactions, get out, practice with a law firm, representing clients who were doing that kind
that's
of thing
for
5 to 7 years. Right.
I gotta get to work.
Yeah. Yeah, well, obviously that was the wrong path. But anyway, I did that, got out, practice with a couple different firms in DC, and about 2 years into it, I was like, holy cow, man, I can't do this for 5 to 7 years. It just it wasn't my cup of tea. I mean,
what part did you not like? The lawyering? What part of the lawyering?
The tediousness of it, you know. And again, I was a low man on the totem pole associate, where I was getting all the grunt work,
reviewing contracts and that
reviewing
kind of thing?
Contracts, reviewing lease agreements. I mean, like one of the big clients that we had at the time was Nextel, back in the Nextel heyday, and all the different retail locations that were opening up. You know, I was responsible for that at the time. It was kind of the boom of assisted living facilities, and so one of the clients was Sunrise, for instance, and it was, you know, because we were so busy at that time as a firm. I got tasked with kind of leading the charge on certain of these development projects. I had no idea what I was doing whatsoever. I still remember we were opening up one in Brick, New Jersey, and I had a dream one night that a dump truck load of bricks fell on me. And I was like, oh, man, this is like
that was your omen.
My dream coming true.
Get me out of here.
This project is overwhelming me. So anyway, I just started writing down every idea that I had for different companies. I mean, it was a range from, you know, better ladders to a pickup truck that gate that unfolded so you could drive a motorcycle up onto it. Anyway, just coming up with all these different ideas. And at the time, too, this is 99, kind of 98, 99 time frame, everybody and their brother seemed like to me that they were leaving their company, whatever that was, to start a web-based business. And so, you know, I was writing down different web-based ideas that I had. And I was dating this girl at the time who was getting her medical or PhD in medical anthropology. And she was looking for an internship for the summer. And this was in April of 99. And she couldn't find anything. She asked me if I'd go online, do a search for her, which I did. And there were a couple sites that were geared towards internships, but not that many, although there were a lot dedicated to salary level jobs, right?
Like Monster and Career Builder.
Monster was huge. Career Builder was huge. Actually, Career Builder is based out of Northern Virginia. Hot Jobs, Career Mosaic. I mean, there were a bunch.
Right.
Anyway, I was having this conversation with my parents a couple of days after that, and they had a retail store at the time. And I was telling them the story, and my dad was like, you know what? We have a really hard time finding good hourly help. Are there sites geared towards helping people like us find good hourly help? Because I've run an ad and on Career Builder, on Monster, no luck. Newspapers, hit or miss, and it's pretty expensive. So I was like, you know what? I don't know. I don't know of anything. You know, and I wasn't that far out of school. You know, I was working hourly jobs. So I went back online, did the search, and there was nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, and you could find a couple of hourly positions on CareerBuilder, on Monster, but, you know, you're wading through, you know, controller types of positions and stuff.
Right.
And so it just didn't feel like, you know, that was something that a person wanting to work at Burger King would want to wade through. And so I just started doing discovery work where I was calling, mm-hmm. you know, the Walmarts of the world and local McDonald's managers and that kind of thing, just asking them, hey, what do you do when you need to find mm-hmm. hourly help? And most of the time it was sign in the window. If we get mm-hmm. really desperate, we'll run an ad in the newspaper.
Right.
And so it just felt like that was a big void.
Yeah.
But, you know, as with most things, I felt like, gosh, if it's a good idea, somebody else would be doing it.
Right.
And, you know, and if it is a really good idea, Monster or CareerBuilder or somebody else will come down market and right. dominate it, right? They already mm-hmm. have relationships with McDonald's and UPS and Walmart for their corporate level positions. They can just now list their right. hourly positions too. But I was listening to these Tony Robbins tapes at mm-hmm. the time. You know, Tony Robbins
is. Oh, yeah.
And I had this hellacious commute every day across the 14th Street Bridge.
Yeah.
And one of the things he said just so resonated with me as I was sitting in traffic on 14th Street Bridge, and it was that if everybody had the notion that if it was such a good idea, somebody else would already be doing it, nothing new would ever get created.
Right.
And I was just like, man, that's so true, you know? And yeah. so I just made the decision, you know what? I never wanted to be an attorney my whole life anyway. Screw it, I'm going to go for it. Mm-hmm. And so I took out all the credit cards I could before I left the law firm. I took out the 401k money, you know, although it was not that much, you know, that I'd accumulated at the time, deferred right. all my law school loans and left. And
so give me some, so for the folks listening, some context, how old were you at the time?
So I was 28. 28. At the time.
Yeah. And how much money did you think you needed to start the business at the
that's
time?
That's a good question. I thought that we needed about $500,000 to Ooh, do okay. what we wanted to be able to right. do, which I knew I was not going to be able mm-hmm. to contribute all of that. And so simultaneous with leaving and mm-hmm. you know doing all the things I could do to put in what I had, started raising money from friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so it was going to my parents, going to my roommate from college, going to my Uncle Bobby and my Aunt Vicky and you know friends of friends and stuff in order right. to raise that initial slug.
Right.
And what I thought was going to be $500,000 that was needed ended up being about $2.5 million that was needed over the next several years.
Right. That's okay. That's fascinating. So you were living in Williamsburg at the time?
No, I was in D.C.
You're still in D.C.
at the time. So, okay. So when I had the idea for Snagajob, I was in D.C. practicing. Knew though I didn't want to be there long term. I mm-hmm. just, you know, there were a lot of things I loved about D.C., but I hated the traffic mm-hmm. and the cost of living was higher, and I was trying to operate on a shoestring budget. So I ended up moving to Williamsburg, mm-hmm. and that's where more of my connections were anyway, because that's where I'd gone to high school, gone to college there.
Right.
And bought a place. You know, that was like a mile down the road from my parents and
right.
opened up a little office and a medical office park in Norridge, Virginia.
Okay.
And away we went.
And that's the first office. And then how much time elapsed before you moved to Richmond?
About a year.
Okay.
We just quickly realized that in order for us to hire the development talent, really any mm-hmm. of the talent that we needed, we were going to need to move to Richmond where there's a bigger talent pool. And
gotcha.
So, yeah, after 1 year, started May of 2000, by May of 2001, we moved to Richmond.
Gotcha. And so how many years did you run Snagajob?
From 2000 until 2013.
Okay, so 13 years. And how many employees at its peak while you were there?
When I left, we were like 300 and change. It's 300. Now, I don't know, 400 and change.
Yeah. Does it ever blow your mind that you started something from nothing and then 300 plus people later worked at that place? Does that ever blow your mind?
Yeah, I think, you know, as you look back on it, it's one of those things that you have such great memories and such great experiences from. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're in it,
mm-hmm.
you're just going and you don't really have the time to really appreciate it as much necessarily.
Right.
Not that you don't appreciate it and you're having a ton of fun and,
yeah.
and all that kind of thing. But I think once you're able to step back and get a little bit different perspective,
mm-hmm.
then you start to even appreciate it more, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just the volume of people, right? It's the quality of the relationships that you end up having, and you know, those relationships last past
right.
you know the time that that you work with those folks.
Sure. So, what was your in the 13 years there? Do you have a favorite era? Was like the initial startup year one and two your favorite? Did you like
no.
when you started getting some success? Like, what was your favorite part of your era?
Yeah,
there?
I would say there was a time period from about 2006 to 2011. It's kind of mm-hmm. a 5-year period, 3 to 5-year period, where we were just growing like crazy. Mm-hmm. And it was still small enough where, you know everybody. Mm-hmm. And there's just this us against the world mentality. Mm-hmm. And the chemistry and this shared passion for, all right, guys, here's what we're going to try to achieve. And every win that you get is just this right. euphoric win. And not that there are not plenty of setbacks along the way, you know, yeah. during that period as well, but those are just some awesome times. And it's funny now, again, talking mm-hmm. about the perspective from later is, you know, I get together with people fairly frequently, you know, that I worked with there, and mm-hmm. we talk about, man, those are such fun years.
Sure. So. Sure. I mean, at the time, it appeared to me, and I think to the marketplace, that you guys were bringing like a bit of like Silicon Valley type culture to Richmond. You guys were the first that I know of. You put the slide in your office. You guys were playing soccer in your little rolly chairs, right. and it was like it was a chair casual, soccer, fun baby. Culture. You had your values on the wall, like and it at the time everything else seemed like Richmond was a more rigid business environment, and you guys brought a little flavor and sauce to that. Like, where did that come from?
Hey, for us, it was, I always felt like our biggest differentiator competitively was our culture mm-hmm. and the fact that we had people who would bend over backwards, stay up until whatever time they needed right. to, in order to make our customers happy.
Elon Musk'd them to death. You made them work 18-hour days.
Well, no, I mean, hopefully we didn't, you know, work them to death.
You didn't make them. They wanted to do it.
Grindstone. But yeah, it was just more of this shared passion of, man, we were trying to make this work. Mm-hmm. We were trying to, you know, provide jobs to these hourly folks who may not mm-hmm. otherwise be able to find a job unless we can help them find one. Mm-hmm. We're helping these companies who have this big pain point. And it was just, you know, I don't think it was, I don't know, maybe better to ask somebody else. I don't feel like it was like this cheesy thing or mm-hmm. at all. It was right. like, dude, there are real life stories of how we're really making a difference in people's lives. Mm-hmm. And so my biggest fear when we raised our VC round in mm-hmm. 2006 was that we're going to grow from 25 people who all knew each other super well, who had mm-hmm. all been through a lot of stuff together in order to kind of make it to 2006, mm-hmm. that now all of a sudden we're going to grow from 26 to 100 people in about 9 months. And then to 200, you know, 12 mm-hmm. months after that. And there are going to be a lot more people who've worked here for a few months than people who have worked here for, you know, 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. And what's going to happen to our culture? Are they still going to care in the same way that we all care? And so we, at that point in time, tried to get really, really intentional mm-hmm. about the kind of culture that we wanted to maintain mm-hmm. and that we wanted to continue to improve upon.
Right.
And so we brought in a guy initially who, you know, Greg Moyer, who initially was a consultant for us, loved him, and thankfully mm-hmm. he liked what we were doing, and he came and joined us full time. And
we're trying to hire our G Money, by the way, just as speak. So people in Facebook land, we're hiring our HR generalist, but it's our head of champion of culture, head of recruiting. That kind
How many
of thing.
Things are you going to have to stop doing once that happens?
If you found the right one, none, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Anyways, but go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. And so, you know, again, I would say, going back to your question mm-hmm. of, okay, well, what was the purpose, I guess, and, mm-hmm. you know, trying to really instill this, whatever you want to call it, you know, West Coast-like culture, was mm-hmm. that we wanted to be an awesome place to work mm-hmm. that helped us recruit in the best people, helped us keep those people, helped us recruit in people from all over the country. Mm-hmm. And we just felt like, you know what, if we're really intentional about our people strategy, mm-hmm. then that is going to really drive our business strategy.
Right.
And so we just put a maniacal focus on that, much more so than I think most companies do, mm-hmm. whether right or wrong. In our case, we thought it was right. Again, not that we always got it right, and we definitely didn't, mm-hmm. But we did make it a real focus.
Right. Well, I mean, you may know this, you don't strike me as a very arrogant person. You're always one of the most humble people I've ever met, but like, I feel like you were such a pioneer in this area for that culture focus. It's like the buzzword now. Everybody does it now, right? Everybody mm-hmm. wants the coolest culture. Everybody sees it on TV, but you're doing it in 2000. Yeah. When no one here, in my opinion, else was. I'm sure there were other folks doing it, but I feel like you guys were the best at that. And then not just doing that, but the employment branding wrapped around it. So it was clear to the marketplace who you were looking for, and you're attracting the right people. That transitioning from Snag a Job to where you are now, walk me through that kind of period of your life, leaving Snag a Job. I know you took a cross-country trip with your family and then ultimately forming this idea of Go Happy. Just walk me through all of that.
Yeah, so I left the CEO role in 2013. Mm-hmm. stayed on the board as chairman of the board for another couple of years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would say
that like looking from like from that seat it was, versus the CEO seat?
It was hard.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, the hard part or one of the hardest parts, I would say, is that when you're on the board, you're still getting the decks on, okay, how are we doing against what we said we were going to do for mm-hmm. the year? And so you're still involved in the business, but you're not involved to the extent that you're actually making decisions. Mm-hmm. Some of those decisions you agree with, some of the decisions you disagree with, mm-hmm. right? And for someone who had founded the company, you know, been involved with the company,
sure,
you know, for 13 years.
Strong emotional attachment.
Right. Like, imagine leave Dotson, right? And somebody else comes in and you're still getting the board packet and, you know, they're making certain decisions again that you agree with some that you know, you wouldn't have done that way. And, you know, there are plenty of times when you just want to say, dude, we're doing it all wrong.
Right.
But at the same time, you don't want to be the person who is saying, well, we already tried that, or this is how it, you know, used to be. You don't want to be that person. And frankly, it's not your role.
Right.
And so, so it was, I would say it was hard. I mean, emotionally, you know, it's hard because again, whether right or wrong, you kind of view it as your baby, right?
Sure.
It's more than just a company, right?
Yeah.
It's all the relationships you've developed and, you know, that whole bit. And so, you know, it was harder than I expected it to be, frankly.
So how much time then from, I guess you stepped into the chairman's role until you started Go Happy?
So
I know it was Die Happy then.
It was about 2.5 years, I guess, all in. So, I had, I guess, what would have been the initial impetus for mm-hmm. Go Happy. It sprang from something back in 2005 when 5 years into Snagajob, job, my life was just totally out of balance. All I did was ever work.
Right.
And I started at that point to try to get more intentional about setting goals in these other areas of life that I also cared about, my relationships.
When did you build that goal template spreadsheet that you shared with me?
So that was in that kind of 06, 07 time frame.
You gave it to me probably 2010, 11, something like that, and I still use it to this day.
Do you?
Your exact same spreadsheet, just so
you
know.
I love it. Well, I mean, the thing that struck me was that, you know, in 2005, I, you know, had dropped all of my friendships, basically.
Right.
You know, I didn't go to my best friend from growing up's mom's funeral, even though she was like a second mom to me because I was too busy. I didn't even get invited to one of my best buddies from college wedding, who I traveled to Europe with for a month after college because I would just never return phone calls or anything. And so I always give him crap about that.
Right.
But he gives me crap about not returning his call. So, you know, I just came to this realization. It's like, man, I am just way out of whack.
When you were in
life.
That moment though, like did you feel like what was your mind saying to you? Were you saying I've got to do this, this is so important? Like you probably, your brain wasn't saying I'm purposely neglecting my friends, I'm purposely neglecting my family. Like what's your inner voice doing at that
time?
Yeah,
I mean it was more that I have to make Snagajob work,
right?
And I'm going to work however hard I need to work to make sure that it ends up panning out, because we had brought on friends and family money, and you know, I say it's one thing to lose your own money, that stinks, right? Losing somebody else's money really stinks, and it really, really stinks to lose somebody else's money who you're going to sit around the Thanksgiving table with, right?
Yeah.
Where it's past the cranberries and the quarterlies, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, Sean, how are you doing? And oh, by the way, how are we doing, right? And so, you know, I just did not want to see people lose their money, you know, and I wanted this to be a huge success, and I wanted to be willing to do whatever it took to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it came at the sacrifice of, you know, all these different areas. And I think in retrospect, I could have done it much differently than I did it. I don't think you have to do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my mindset at the time.
Right. And so more intentional look at how you live your life, what's important to you, balance, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And trying to take the same approach with these other areas of life that you do with work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because for most of us, for our work, we're super intentional about what is it that we want to accomplish for the year as a company.
KPIs,
you cascade
and
that
metrics
down.
And all
right,
that stuff.
That's right.
Very,
and similarly with even having a vision statement, right, for the company, a mission statement for the company, a set of core values. And so when I got to that point, I was like, you know what? Our mission statement, even at the time for Snagajob, was super important to us. Our values were super important. I was like, if it's so important for work, why am I not doing that in the rest of my life? And so that then kind of set in motion this idea of trying to be more intentional about these other areas of life.
Gotcha.
Now, then it's not like the idea for Go Happy came initially at that point, but when I then left a snagga job, it felt like, you know what, there's got to be a better, more interactive tool to be doing these things that I'm doing manually, right? Putting this stuff in a Google Sheet or in a right. Google Doc and putting that then on my calendar and sending invites to
doing,
people.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was like, I'm going to find something. I just didn't find anything that I really liked. I didn't want to jump into something immediately, mm-hmm. you know, because everybody's advice to me who had been something or who had been through something similar to mm-hmm. leaving a company was like, take a year off, you know, mm-hmm. like don't rush into the next thing, even though you're going to be tempted to, because you're going to feel like mm-hmm. you're being lazy and,
right.
you know, went through all of those different emotions.
Right.
And I, you know, I also had this question of, okay, well, you know, do I want to start something again? Because, mm-hmm. as you know, it's hard,
yeah.
you know,
it's
and it does a take a big sacrifice.
Like 10 years of your life,
yeah.
or however long it.
And I was like,
yeah.
gosh, do I want to do that again? You know, mm-hmm. I've got three young kids. My kids were 6, 4, and 2 at the time. And, you know, I didn't have that the first time at Snagga Job. I mean, I was single, didn't have any mm-hmm. kids. You know, do I just want to consult? Do I want to, you know, invest in a few things, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it might be? But I just missed so badly being part of a team, mm-hmm. you know, and trying to, again, accomplish something together.
Yep.
And, you know, there's nothing like, I don't think, the camaraderie that you get when you do have a group of friends, right, that mm-hmm. you're working alongside of trying to accomplish something that's really hard to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
Friends in general are great, but when you can combine then this, hey, we're trying to achieve this, you know, really cool thing together, mm-hmm. that adds this other dimension to it. And I just missed that.
Yeah.
And so eventually decided, you know what, oh, I do want to start something again. I have this idea. Let's start doing some research to figure out whether there's something to it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that solo for a while and then ended up hiring Nick to come on as the first full-time employee. Nick worked with us at Snagga Job for 10 years. And he then really helped me, you know, figure out whether mm-hmm. or not there was really something to this whole idea of helping
right.
people be intentional about these different areas of life.
Right. So for folks that don't know what GoHappy is, you want to explain, you've kind of explained the origin of why, and then like now explain to them what it is?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's iterated from what that initial idea was into what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it is now is it is a social platform for groups that helps them build a better sense of community and really mm-hmm. fuel the relationships that exist within that group mm-hmm. and giving them a place to privately share, collaborate, and save the things that are important to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so those groups can include everywhere from family to different friend groups, right? Your college buddies group, your mm-hmm. old work friends group, could be, you know, your workout group, mm-hmm. You know, sports team group, you know, faith-based group, whatever it might
mm-hmm.
be. And how we have gotten to that is from when we were doing these various discovery sessions with people, the area of life that people tended to want to be more intentional about that mm-hmm. they currently weren't, but yet really, really mattered to them were their relationships.
Right.
And so, you know, we've, again, iterated over time as to what type of solution can help solve that pain point. But mm-hmm. the pain point is nonetheless the same. It's that, mm-hmm. hey, people want to be a better friend, right?
Mm-hmm.
They want to be able to stay in touch with and share and encourage the people who they're tight with and kind of who they do life with
mm-hmm.
in a better way than what they're currently able to do. And mm-hmm. so again, we're trying to find that right platform to help them do that.
Nice. So walk folks through, I guess, where you are in the process then. They go happy.
Yeah, so the initial product that we launched was focused on helping people get together in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a recurring theme that we heard come up from people who are our target audience, people who are mm-hmm. just, you know, busy professionals, they have kids, they want to, you know, they and their spouse want to get together with these three other couples, but it's a pain in the rear to find the right time mm-hmm. to do it. And we felt like one of the, and still feel like, and the research backs this up, that one of the keys to relationships is actually spending face-to-face time together. Yes,
mm-hmm.
you want to share stuff in between those, but, you know, spending face-to-face time together is important.
Mm-hmm.
So the first product we launched was this whole get-together-focused application.
Focused on scheduling?
Part of it, yeah. Focused on the scheduling piece, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being able to suggest a handful of dates out to people and having it be a date poll where everybody
right.
could vote on it. Hopefully quickly finding the date that works best for everybody and
right.
having it synced to your calendar. Having all the details of the thing that you're going to go do then be
right.
all loaded into one place.
Right. If you share photos and chat, it's all there.
It's all there
place.
In that one centralized mm-hmm. place, right? And what we found, though, was that the most active users of it were doing things with the same people over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
They had these kind of 5 to 7 groups
mm-hmm.
in life that they did life with. And they're,
right.
you know, in some cases with some overlap between those 5 to 7 groups.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, they're just totally disparate groups, right? It's
right.
that, okay, I've got this group of old work friends that I love to get beers with every couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got my family group over here that's, you know, we're not hanging out, you know, my family and my old work friends group.
Right.
And so, yep, they were trying to hack together what GoHappy did in order to, you know, schedule the next get together, and I have to invite everybody to it again.
Right.
And then the next one, I got to invite everybody to that one again, mm-hmm. and it didn't allow for real-time messaging and that kind of thing. And so we made the decision in April of last year in 18 to rewrite the platform to mm-hmm. allow people to create these persistent groups, these groups that they did life with, mm-hmm. giving them a platform where they can kind of be themselves inside that group, mm-hmm. different than social media where, you know, in social media, it's the lowest common denominator in terms of what you're sharing, because right. it has to be digestible by everybody,
right?
Versus, hey, the stuff I'm going to share with my college buddies,
yeah.
I can be my real self, right? And that's
right.
one persona.
Right.
Who I am with my family is this different one. I'm not going to share the same stuff. And so giving right. people the ability to create these different groups where they're sharing different kinds of things, we found is a really important thing.
Right.
And so anyway, that platform then launched in December of mm-hmm. 18. And, you know, we're iterating on that one just as quickly as we can.
Nice. So, I guess, well, I wanted to ask back on the Snagajob days and then kind of lead into the GoHappy was for entrepreneurs talking about funding, raising funds. You talked about Snagajob early was friends and family. You mentioned something around 2006 or so. Were there rounds between 2000, 2006?
Well, there was kind of a continual fundraising mode from 2000 through 2002.
Right.
And 2000, when we launched, funding was right because mm-hmm. web businesses were, you know, going public at $100
right.
million dollar valuations,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't even have a product yet.
Right.
And then March 2001, the bubble burst.
Right.
And then fundraising got really hard.
Right.
And so basically, once March of 01 mm-hmm. hit, we raised a little bit more, but not that much more, and it mm-hmm. made us just stay really lean, mm-hmm. which I, in retrospect, very much appreciate and like mm-hmm. the fact that that happened.
Right.
And so we just had to get ourselves to profitability, or otherwise we weren't going to survive.
Right.
And so it was nip and tuck, you know, for those first 4 years. And mm-hmm. April of 2004, we turned our first profit, $1,800.
Wow.
Never forget.
How exciting was that?
That was
rather
pretty darn exciting.
That's cool. So what, when you decided to start GoHappy, what was your fundraising strategy and kind of thought process going into it?
Yeah, so up front, it was, you know, kind of, you know, me funding it mm-hmm. and then bringing on friends and family,
mm-hmm.
Some people who had invested in Snagajob re-upping mm-hmm. again and this mm-hmm. one. And so it's been similar, you know, different. Yeah, you know, so we've been at it for a couple of years, and mm-hmm. You know, at different times being more in the fundraising mode than others, mm-hmm. but you know, kind of always somewhat being in the fundraising
right.
mode, right?
Yeah.
A lot of the
why are you asking? Why?
Right.
I'm not from raising, but are you asking?
Yeah, exactly. You want to? Maybe we can open one.
Yeah.
You know, you read these articles where it's like, when's the right yeah. time to start raising funds? It's like as soon as you close the other one, right, or the previous one,
right?
So,
yeah. So, like, is that? That to me has got to be, you know, we both know James at Tenant Turner, and you know, I watched him in his first year of Tenant Turner, which I think he did a great job of fundraising to get it launched. But it's, you know, I feel like he felt at times he was 60% of the time a fundraiser, 40% mm-hmm. of the time a CEO running a company, and then a CEO running a company is a full time job in itself.
Right.
So, I guess that's. Do you have any thoughts for entrepreneurs out there that are battling that about? The distractions of fundraising versus the focus of being a CEO, and just how to balance that in your mind, how to avoid being distracted?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of your top four responsibilities mm-hmm. as CEO is
yeah.
making sure that you have enough capital to be able to go execute on
yeah.
whatever the vision is, right? Because I think for most ideas, they don't not work because it wasn't a good idea or that
mm-hmm.
the pain point didn't exist. It was that you just ran out of capital as you were trying to figure out how to solve that pain point.
Right.
And so, you know, it's got to be one of the top, in my opinion, four responsibilities. And so whereas
mm-hmm.
at times, and it still feels that way here, right, where,
right.
gosh, it's a distraction. I wish I could just focus on the marketing elements of it, or
right.
I wish I could focus on the building out of the team or on the product or, you know, whatever it might be.
But those things,
like, okay.
those things you just mentioned take money.
That's right.
And then
that's
you're,
right.
Okay,
unless
you're back to here.
Capital,
yeah.
None of that other stuff happens.
Yeah, sure.
So.
Sure. Well, yeah, well, before I get into my at the end, we do a series of questions in the lightning round or whatnot. Anything else that you want to talk about, share, before we get into the lightning round?
No.
Did we cover all this
stuff? I don't think so.
Stuff
yeah,
that makes you interesting?
Yeah. Cool. We could have cut that off probably 15 minutes ago if that was the case.
So at the end of each podcast, because it's a Richmond-based podcast, I like to talk about things you enjoy about the city we live in the Richmond area. It doesn't have to be the city. It could be the suburbs, too. But so starting with favorite restaurant in Richmond.
Favorite restaurant? Ooh, Dutch & Company.
Okay. Favorite outdoor activity or place?
Running the trails.
Where, through like near the river?
Yeah. Okay. Like putting in Reedy Creek mm-hmm. and doing Buttermilk and the North Bank Trail.
Okay. If you bring a friend to Richmond for the weekend and they've never been here and they get here on a Friday afternoon, they're going to leave on a Sunday afternoon. So they get, you know, Friday night, all day Saturday, Sunday morning to experience the city and all that it offers. Mm. What would you do to show your friend the city of Richmond?
That's a great question.
Walk me through your ideal Richmond weekend.
Yeah, so maybe start, well, it depends. If it's nice outside, maybe go down to the Quirk, have a drink on the rooftop. Mm-hmm. I would hit, if I didn't hit Dutch & Company that night, I would probably hit up Heritage.
Okay.
So I love the cocktail scene.
Always
there.
A winner, yeah.
And then on Saturday morning, I'd come down, take them on the run mm-hmm. downtown.
Do you do that before work? Like when you run that trail, do you go and then come shower?
Typically, no, because we don't have a shower.
You don't have a shower?
Unfortunately, I wish we did.
Gotcha. Gather no, does. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Gather. But anyways, go ahead. So you're going to run, and then what?
Yeah, and then, typically then we'll head over to the Shaco Urban Farmhouse location just because it's nice outside, the doors are open and stuff.
Sure.
Grab a coffee, something to eat, and then shower up and then get down to ZZQ in time for brisket, and then maybe head over to Tang and Biscuit for some shuffleboard, maybe hit Circuit.
Who knows?
Since I didn't go to Dutch & Company,
that's where you're going to do dinner on Saturday.
I'm just going to drink and eat my way through with this person.
Okay.
And
Sunday, you have a brunch spot Sunday morning?
Sunday morning brunch spot. Man, that's a good question. We don't really have a favorite brunch spot. We should have a favorite brunch spot.
Yeah, there's a lot of good choices out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, well, really appreciate you taking the time. Just share some of your thoughts with us. I've joked about at the beginning, but you truly are one of my heroes. I think you're one of the best business leaders in the Richmond area, and always been a big fan, and I'm glad that we're now friends. And so thank you for all that you do to make Richmond an interesting place to live. So I appreciate it.
Right back at you, buddy. Thanks for all that you guys do.
Sure. Appreciate it.